Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio and our friends in the public media spectrum across the region, bringing you the latest news. I'm Carl Lengel. It is the 10th of June, 2026, a Wednesday. With rising food and fuel prices, families are thinking more about what they buy at the store and how often they drive. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports Montana's food banks are making those same decisions as they grapple with inflation.
After President Donald Trump launched the war against Iran, gas prices spiked. That trickled down to what we pay at the grocery store because it costs significantly more to deliver that food. Gail Carlson with the Montana Food Bank Network says food pantries' buying power has declined.
And it's a combination of the families needing more food and their inability to provide that extra food because of costs.
Carlson says food banks are serving about the same number of people as before the Iran war. But those families are relying on them more often. That's happening as pantries are buying less food because of inflation. That means families are going home with less. Food banks are trying to find ways to buy more food at a time, cutting down on fuel costs, but Carlson says that's not enough to keep up with rising prices. The problem could get worse as kids get out of school for the summer and their families lose access to school-based food programs. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has denied hearing a lawsuit from young climate activists regarding several Trump administration policies. The federal court rejected the 22 young people's suit challenging a slew of executive orders signed by President Trump in early 2025. The orders declared a national emergency and promoted increasing development of coal and other fossil fuels. The plaintiffs argued these policies would continue to worsen planet-warming emissions and the harms of climate change. Missoula Federal District Court Judge Dana Christensen dismissed the case after its hearing last fall. In his decision, he wrote that he agreed the young people were being negatively impacted by climate change, but that the court could not review every action taken by the Trump administration. The Court of Appeals agreed, saying the court did not have the power to grant the relief the plaintiffs were asking for. Wyoming's GOP is suing the Secretary of State for the right to financially back candidates in the primary. The party voted to champion endorsements at its recent state convention. KHOL's Evan Robinson Johnson reports.
Lawyers in Cheyenne and Washington, D.C. filed the First Amendment challenge. It comes months before a closely contested primary. Endorsed candidates for federal and statewide races will also have to pass a new loyalty test. This is the first year the state party will make those selections. GOP Vice Chair Bob Ferguson says that will have a big impact, whether or not the money can legally flow.
Say those endorsements will come out sometime over the next, 30 to 45 days would be my guess.
Teton County's Republican chapter has said it won't join the state in backing candidates before voters weigh in August. It's likely too late to change state law this year, but Ferguson says the legal challenge could compel the attorney general to tell the legislator to do so. For KHOL News, I'm Evan Robinson Johnson.
Rocky Mountain College's president is retiring. The small private college in Billings announced on Tuesday that Robert Wilmoth will retire in June 2027 after 15 years of leadership at Montana's oldest institution of higher education. Wilmoth has served as president since 2013. He directed Rocky's Master of Physician Assistant Studies program prior to taking the role. Wilmoth was a cardiac, thoracic, and vascular surgeon at Billings Clinic before joining RMC. The college says the RMC Board of Trustees will begin a formal search at the start of the 2026-27 academic year. Wilmoth will continue serving as president through June 2027. A member of the Bozeman Police Department is getting important protective gear in the next couple of weeks. YPR's Kay Erickson reports.
The Bozeman Police Department announced Tuesday that K9 Hex will receive a bullet and stab protective vest. Thanks to Vested Interest in Canines, or VI Canines, a nonprofit group that provides these vests and other assistance to dogs and law enforcement. Hex's vest has a value of about $1,800, will be custom fitted to him, and weigh an average of 4 to 5 pounds. and it comes with a 5-year warranty. According to VI Canines, they've provided more than 6,500 vests to canines in all 50 states, including Zip with the Missoula Police Department and Elmira with the University of Montana Police Department. In Billings, I'm Kay Erickson.
Governor Greg Gianforte is proclaiming Montana Wildfire Smoke Ready Week this week. In a news release on Monday, Gianforte encourages Montanans to proactively protect their health, improve indoor air quality, and prepare their homes before the smoke arrives. Department of Environmental Quality officials remind residents that wildfire smoke does not always come from nearby fires, but can travel hundreds of miles and affect many Montana communities. Steps people can take to prepare for smoke include replacing home heating and cooling system filters with MERV 13 or higher efficiency air filters, using portable HEPA air cleaners to maintain clean indoor air, and monitoring air quality forecasts. For more information on wildfire smoke preparedness, visit the Department of Public Health and Human Services website at dphs.mt.gov/airquality. When it comes to crossing the road, chickens have an easier time than grizzly bears, especially on Montana's highways. That's a problem when you're trying to get distinct populations of bears to connect. Montana Public Radio's Ellis Julin has more on new research identifying high-traffic roads that can make it impossible for bears to cross.
Heavily trafficked roads can act just like a giant wall, blocking wildlife from safely moving across. Highways can cause fatal collisions for people and animals and present conservation challenges as well.
We know that when traffic volume is above 100 vehicles an hour, it is very unlikely that a grizzly bear gets to the other side of the road.
That's road ecologist Marcel Huser. He studies how roads impact wildlife movement and ways to reduce wildlife vehicle collisions. He's also the lead author of a new report looking at where wildlife are hit most on roadways in western Montana.
And we identified road sections that have a relatively high concentration of collisions, and it's mostly deer. And then there's a conservation aspect of the work that is described in the report.
He then overlaid that collision info with data on grizzly bear movement. Grizzly populations in Montana exist in 5 distinct recovery zones: the areas surrounding Yellowstone and Glacier National Parks, the Cabinet Yak, and the Bitterroot ecosystem.
Now we can see where grizzly bears have a problem if they are to move, say, between the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem to the Bitterroot.
Courts have repeatedly ruled that bears can't be removed from the endangered species list and returned to state-level management without gene flow. That's a fancy term for bears moving freely from one recovery zone to another. Currently, that's most likely to happen between the 2 biggest populations surrounding Yellowstone and Glacier.
The shortest distance between those occupied ranges is essentially east of Butte, between Butte and, say, Cartwell.
Huser says building overpasses at sites like Homestake Pass would have the biggest impact for grizzly movement. Interest in wildlife crossings is growing. State laws passed in 2025 established a subset of marijuana tax revenue to go towards crossings and the development of a specialty license plate to help fund the work. While funding isn't enough to build crossings everywhere they're needed, Huser says this money combined with research is a good start. In Missoula, I'm Ellis Julin.
The Belgrade Community Library will host a range of summer activities for children and families to learn about dinosaurs and history this summer. The program, Unearth a Story, Connecting Science and Literacy, is for children and young adults ages 19 and below. The activities include building steam kits, a dinosaur picnic with a children's book writer, and a 2-day camp. There will also be science-themed presentations on how rocks form, mammal adaptations, and fish identification. Unearth a Story runs June 12th through August 8th. A full schedule of activities is on the library's calendar on the Belgrade Library website. Construction is underway to reopen an historic Billings theater. The Babcock Theater was shuttered following a ceiling collapse in May 2025. When the collapse occurred, the Babcock was leased from the city of Billings by Art House Cinema and Pub, and the events at the theater accounted for about 30% of the operation's annual income. Insurance issues complicated future planning for several months, but by the beginning of the new year, the city of Billings and Art House management had agreed that ownership needed to change hands. In April, the city sold the theater to Art House for $1, and the organization was freed up to begin repairs. Construction crews set up scaffolding June 1st. Arthouse Babcock Executive Director Matt Blakesley says the Billings community is interested in continuing the facility's diverse performance history as it moves into the future.
The Babcock is a chameleon in my mind. When you look at the history of it, it's going to be 120 years old next year. It was built in 1907. And for those 120 years, it has morphed and changed and shifted, whether it was vaudeville or opera house or, you know, silent film or live film or a boxing arena, like whatever the Babcock needed to be for the community at the time. That's what the story and the history has been. And so we take that very seriously in how we're planning and programming the future of whatever the community needs this to be. So whether it's Yellowstone Repertory Theater or Nova or Billings Studio Theater or some other local or a touring, you know, hey, there's, if this is the space that fits what you're trying to do, that's what we're here for. And, you know, concerts, and whether it's local musicians or traveling musicians, whatever it is, again, you can come in here and do that, whether it's businesses looking for a place for their presentation. And then obviously film is always at the center of the target for us.
Blakesley says the $5 million renovation will be gradual, but adding the new technologies to advance the uses, especially for live events, is part of the planning now.
We just had a flooring company in to look at our stage floor. Again, this is probably a couple years down the road, but we're trying to, as we're working on this $5 million campaign, like what is the reality of what is this going to cost and what are we going to do? We don't just slap a coat of paint on things. We truly want to restore where we can restore. We want to upgrade where we can upgrade. I don't think the community understands how truly special and amazing and awesome this theater is going to be.
Blakesley adds the art house staff is excited about the building's upgrades.
The narrative that we're saying is like, okay, let's plan the next 120 years of this theater, because there's so much life to be experienced there. And the stories of first dates, we got a lot of first dates to have, first kisses, you know, kids' first movies, and, you know, add plays into that and add concerts into that. Like, this is a space that everybody, our dream, everybody's going to have a story about the Babcock Theater because of an experience they had there with their community. And we just can't wait.
Construction continues throughout the summer with a target date for a soft opening in the fall and full-out operations in January 2027.
There's so many different things happening in those months to truly celebrate the reopening of the Babcock and to point towards that next 120 years. So rather than like a one-and-done grand opening celebration, we're planning like, let's take some time, because not everybody can make it on the same weekend and not everybody wants to come to the same thing. So let's have a variety of different things in there for people to come and experience.
For more information on the Babcock's restoration, visit arthousebillings.com. That's The Worm for this Wednesday. Catch up with us tomorrow. We'll have another episode for you early birds then.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.